Welcome to My IELTS Classroom, the podcast where two ex-examiners talk all things IELTS. I'm Shelley Cornick.
And I'm Nick Long.
And today we are talking about how you can avoid overgeneralizing in your IELTS essay. What is hedging and how can you use it? How can you stop exaggerating in problem solution essays? And is it true that all children become drug addicts? Hello, Nick. How are you?
Hello. How are you today?
I'm good. Not as good as you. You're about to have a week's holiday.
Yeah, exactly. It starts in T minus probably about 3 hours.
And what are you going to do, Nick, on your week off? Your week without IELTS?
I'm going to sleep, like? First of all. That's the first thing I'm going to do. I'm going to sleep.
Good.
I'm probably going to try and do a lot more exercise than I have been doing because I've let it slip, unfortunately, over the last month or two. Mm-hmm. So I've actually set myself a target of trying to walk in the next, well, what's it going to be, 7 or 8 days. I'm going to try and walk 60 kilometers over the whole time.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a core. Okay, that's like almost 2 marathons, 1.5 marathons.
Basically, so I want to kickstart myself back into.
I think now is a good time to do it because winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
And if you don't start now, it could very easily slide to just sitting in your apartment.
Yep.
Sheltering from the dark and cold. So that is a very good idea, mate.
And the clocks go back as well tonight. So that means it's going to start getting darker. 4:30, 5 o'clock here, which is not good.
Yes, actually, we should mention that. So if anybody, because I don't know why, I have a real problem with time, Nick. I always get very confused between like all of the times in the different time zones. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a country whose clocks change next week, just remember that's going to affect, if you're one of our subscribers and you're joining all of our live lessons or our intensive courses, that's going to affect your relationship with GMT.
Your relationship with GMT.
I don't know how else to describe it. So, you know, if your clocks go back or forward, GMT stays the same, but your connection to it will change.
Complicated relationship with GMT.
Yes, we all have a good relationship. My relationship with GMT never changes.
Which
because
is
in
excellent.
Russia, yes, we don't change our clocks. Yeah. So I am always +3 GMT. Before we start, talking about intensive courses. Mm-hmm. Nick, you're starting the first speaking intensive course on like the week after next. So the 2nd of November.
The first lesson, yeah, 6th of November. Well, 2nd of November.
2nd of November. Don't confuse people. It's already we're confused. At 3 p.m. GMT, whatever time that is. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So, Nick, what are you going to be doing? What, just very quickly, what's going to happen in those five-day intensive course?
So in the first lesson, the first day on Monday, we're going to be looking at part one, strategies for part one, how to answer part one questions. On the second and third day, we're going to be looking at part two. The second day we're going to be focusing on Tuesday, we're going to be focusing on past questions because, as we know, those past questions are pretty common. We're also going to be looking very closely at how to stay in the past tense, which is very important. One of the biggest mistakes that people make in part two. Day three, Wednesday, we're still going to be looking at part two, but we're going to be focusing a little bit more on Lexis. Right. And we're going to be looking at how to sort of how we can use our Lexis to make our story in part two sound interesting and different sort of grammar constructions as well.
Yeah.
Day four and five is going to be part three. In day four on Thursday, we're going to look first of all at how to give our opinion in a clear manner.
Yeah.
Without using personal examples, very, very, very important.
Extremely important.
And then on day five, we're going to have a lot of time on day five on Friday, looking at difficult questions, especially, and how we can answer difficult questions.
Which is super important if you're the students who want a seven or an eight for speaking, because those final three questions in part three are the ones where the examiners are going to really push you.
Exactly.
Amazing. So that's running from the 2nd of November. It's an hour and 15 minutes every day. And I think right now we've got 3 spaces left. That's all. We've already got 5 people. It's a maximum of 8. It's a small group. It's the same people every day. So you're going to get lots of personal attention. So if you're listening and you think, hey, that sounds cool, I want to come and work with Nick, I want to be in a room with Nick and see his lovely face, I'm telling you, it's a lovely one. Then we're going to offer all of our podcast listeners a 10% discount for this first intensive course. So you can get that. You just need to go to our website, myieltsclassroom.com. Go to the menu at the top, click on speaking. You need the bronze speaking package. That's the intensive course. And if you add the code podcast10, that will give you a 10% discount on the intensive speaking course. In fact, Nick, should we offer them a 10% discount on all the intensive courses next month?
If you want to. It's your call.
Let's do that. Okay. No, I think we should, right? Because our podcast listeners contact us lots, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to offer them something back. So let's do the same offer for both of the reading courses. So we've got an academic reading course, a general reading course, and in the last week of November, a listening intensive course. So you can use the code podcast10 to get a 10% discount on any of those. Amazing. All right. Well, I'm excited for that to start, Nick. I'm also excited because we've had a couple of really lovely emails this week about the episode we did, the three most common IELTS grammar mistakes. So I thought we'd share those with our listeners. So the first one came from Sonia, who's in Canada. She had a really interesting point to make about the types of mistakes that people make. Mm-hmm. So she said, first language plays a tremendous part here. My language does not have articles and prepositions are quite simplified. And here comes the big one. It is 100% phonetic. One sound, one letter, just one spelling rule. Write as you speak and read as it is written. So I thought, Nick, that was a really great email because I think, you know, when we were speaking last week, you know, we chose those errors that we discussed. At the end, we mentioned articles, didn't we?
We did.
As something which, to be honest, articles is, for almost every student, articles is going to be a lifelong struggle because there are so many article rules. And because, as Sonia says, lots of languages just don't have them. So I think it's interesting. Would you say, like, you know, when you were an examiner, would articles be something which, or dependent prepositions? So when you've got things like, you know, interested in or depend on, would mistakes with articles or dependent prepositions, would that stop a student getting a 7?
That's a tough thing to say, to be honest. I think articles definitely not.
Yeah.
Unless it was like, unless there were consistent errors, like all the way through.
Yeah.
Then maybe. I think prepositions is different because, I mean, if someone says, I like listening music,
right?
I mean, listening to music is something that you learn at the very beginning of English.
Yes.
And I think, yes, there are some tricky prepositions. There are some confusing prepositions that you could mix up and everything would still sound okay. But at the same time, I do think there are kind of like simple prepositions that you should know if you want to get a high grammar score.
I think you've made an interesting distinction there, actually, because I think you're right. So for me, articles, even if you had, I mean, you need error-free sentences for a 7. So I guess if you had like 3 or 4 article errors in every sentence, that might stop you getting, because you would have no error-free sentences. But generally, article errors are the systematic error that stops you getting an 8, right? You can have systematic errors for a 7. And for many students, that's what articles is going to be, right? It puts you a ceiling at a 7. But you're right, Nick. I think there are some dependent prepositions. I don't know. If you used a really difficult verb like convinced, right? And instead of saying I was, people are convinced by, you said convinced with.
Okay.
I'm probably not going to punish you, so to speak.
It's less of a mistake, isn't it?
It's less of a mistake because it's very high level and at least you understood you needed a preposition.
True, yeah.
But I guess for some of the other ones, dependent prepositions, which are basic and we do teach at elementary, as you just said, like
listening to depend, music.
Everyone should know it's depend on, not depend with, right? Everyone should know that you have to say listen to. Then those ones maybe could keep you at a lower score. But I think it is interesting because I think a lot of the problems we see, we discussed which errors to talk about last week.
We did.
And one of the ones we discussed was, should we include using the continuous tense, like the present continuous, instead of the present simple, to talk about facts. Mm. Right. So a lot of our students do that, don't they, Nick? They
sometimes,
may say,
yeah, they do.
I don't know, people are spending too much money on apps or something, mm-hmm. instead of people spend, mm-hmm. usually. Mm-hmm. But the students who do that, which countries do they usually come from?
Oh, to be honest, I don't know. I'm going to guess, though.
Go on.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
I'm going to say India.
It is, yeah. It's our Indian and Pakistani students, because my guess is that in their first language, mm-hmm. you can use the continuous in that way.
Okay.
But, so I think that those errors are definitely a first language.
Yeah. I mean, first language definitely plays a big role, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was also just, when I got this email, I was thinking about how we're quite, so if you're studying English, we have things which are horrible, like articles, right? But one of the good things about English is we don't have the masculine and feminine nouns.
True, we don't.
Right, so yeah. I just remember learning French and German and just, I just did not understand, like, I can't even remember anything to give an example, but why is a table feminine? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not. Mm-hmm. And why is a pen masculine?
Yeah, that's the same thing. Like, I'm okay now with masculine and feminine. Like, when I speak Russian, I can manage it okay. But I do want to know who decided this is masculine and this is feminine. I don't.
Well, Nick, it's nuts. And when I came to Russia and I tried to learn Russian, mm-hmm. it's still not very good. But I, for some reason, even though I knew, I still don't understand why I did this. But for about a year, Nick, mm-hmm. in my head, mm-hmm. I really believed that, like, for example, if I was using a fork, mm-hmm. which in Russian is like vilka, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And the is feminine. Mm-hmm. I believed it was vilka because I was using the fork and I'm a woman.
So you thought if it was a man using it, it would be like vilok or something like that.
I thought if you were using it, it'd be vilk, right? So the whole time I was changing the gender of the fork, mm-hmm. and the fork's like, I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. So that was obviously like the influence of my first language. So I am very sympathetic. If you
It's difficult. It really is difficult, yeah.
But we understand that some of these things are difficult. But I mm-hmm. think the things we discussed last week, mm-hmm. like subject-verb agreement.
Yes.
Even though those things are difficult, I'm afraid
it's
those mistakes
critical.
Are critical.
To get a good score, you need to nail it, don't you?
You've got to, right? Mm-hmm. If you're not using plural nouns to talk in general, if you're not matching or agreeing your subjects and your verbs, you will mm-hmm. get a 6 or less. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's why we chose those particular ones, rather than articles, which everybody hates. So thank you, Sonia, for your email. I thought that was interesting. And very quickly, we had another lovely email from a listener who is in Cape Town, South Africa. Better you, that's nice and warm at this time of year.
True.
Who mm-hmm. says that she's been listening to the podcast, and I just wanted to give her a shout out because she's taking her test on the 31st. So that's at the, next week?
Yeah, that's a week away.
So, Lisa, good luck. Mm. And I wanted to mention her because she said, unfortunately, I only get to listen to the podcast for 20 minutes every morning and in the evening on my way home from work. In my opinion, your lessons are by far the best, most informative and most interactive, which makes it so much fun. There never seems to be a dull moment. Is that true? I don't know, Nick.
That's very sweet. That's very sweet.
It's very sweet. Yeah. And what I wanted to say was, you know, Lisa says I only get to listen to it for 20 minutes every morning and in the evening. Mm-hmm. But I think that is, if you're listening or if you're studying for 40 minutes every day,
yeah.
5 days a week, that's good learning.
Yeah. What is that?
Yeah.
It's maths time. That's what, three hours, three and a bit hours a week.
200 minutes, 3 hours and 20 minutes
there
a week.
We go.
Yeah. Right.
That's good. And that's, you know, that's plenty of time.
I think that's an amazing amount of time. And if Lisa, I don't know if you've heard our 30-day motivation challenge episode, but that's all about doing something consistently. And that's just 10 minutes a day, not 40 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. So I think you're doing a great job and we wish you luck in your test.
Yeah.
Write and tell us how you get on.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Hello, my name is Shini and my favorite lesson in my IELTS classroom is Introduction to Complex Sentences.
Hi, I'm Sivaraj. My favorite my IELTS classroom video lesson is inversion.
Hey, this is George, and my favorite my IELTS classroom lesson is hedging.
This is my IELTS classroom.
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 So, let's get going. Today, oh, Nick, this is for me one of the most, I guess, unspoken problems that students have in their essays.
You might say it's the worst problem that all students have.
What Nick did there was very clever. It is definitely. I think what happens is, right, as a teacher, you focus on the big things. Yeah. So as a teacher, you're like, okay, I've got these students. They need to know how to write essays. So we'll teach them how to organize. Okay, done. And then we'll teach them how to write, you know, do some academic skills like topic sentences, referencing, all of this kind of stuff. And then what you sometimes forget, I think, is that sometimes students need support in terms of the ideas that they put into their essay. And what I've kind of noticed, and I don't think I really noticed it before, to be honest, when I was just teaching sort of three or four IELTS classrooms a week, and I maybe had, I don't know, 8 or 12 essays every week to mark. But what I've noticed now that we are marking many, many more essays, students are suffering from what I call exaggerating syndrome. Now, exaggerate is quite a difficult word. Okay, so if I was in a classroom and a student said to me, Shelley, what does exaggerate mean? I would probably give the example of a man who went fishing.
Okay.
Do you know why?
I don't know this example. You're going to have to explain it to me.
Oh, well, okay. So what happens when people go fishing, right? They catch a fish.
Yeah.
And let's imagine it's not a small fish, but maybe it's like 20 centimetres.
I see what you're getting at, yeah.
Right. So they show their friend, you know, I caught a fish. It was this big, right? And then a second friend comes and says, did you catch a fish today? And they say, yeah, I caught a fish. It was this big. But now it's not 20 centimetres, it's 30 centimetres, right? And by the time you have told the story 10 times...
It's the biggest fish in the world.
It's a shark, right? It's like 2.5 metres long and could feed a whole village. So that's what exaggerating is. Exaggerating is making things bigger than they really are.
Yep.
And I think sometimes what happens in IELTS is that IELTS give you a question. It's usually a problem solution question, which is about a genuinely difficult topic or a difficult problem. And then they ask you to sort of describe the causes of that problem and maybe what the problems are or what the solutions could be. And because, and for some reason, students feel that they need to really solve these problems in two or three sentences. And so they end up giving us ideas which are just too big, too general, and just not true, right? So I think to make this clear, the easiest way we can do this is to look at a couple of examples together.
Okay.
So let's get Nick to read it, because we all know that Nick's got a lovely voice, right? So Nick, this is, we're gonna look at a couple of questions from the Cambridge books, all right? So why don't you read this first question, and then I recommend, if you're listening, you pause the podcast and you spend, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes writing down what your ideas would be for this question. And then we'll come back and we'll check them together.
Cool. Okay, the question is, in many countries, the tradition of having family meals together is disappearing. Why is this happening? And what will the effects of this be on the family and society?
Thank you, Nick. All right, so we've got the tradition of family meals is disappearing. Why? And what effects will there be for family and society? All right, so I just want you to pause the video and off you go just for a couple of minutes. Pause the video. I've said that too many times. I want you to pause the podcast. Just go away, make some notes, and then when you're ready, come back. My IELTS classroom. Okay, so welcome back. Let's have a look then. So Nick, why don't we do this together? Why don't you tell me? I think it's true, actually, that people eat less family meals together now
Definitely
than
true.
In the
yeah.
past. So why would you say that is? What would be a couple of reasons that you would give for this?
I think the first reason would be people are busier than they were 20, 30 years ago.
Right. I agree. Mm-hmm. So if that was one, your first argument mm-hmm. in the essay, which is a good argument, mm-hmm. like how is that impacting? Why is being busier impacting on us having meals together?
Well, I would have to explain this in fewer words, but I think the main reasons would be that both parents are working, which yeah. wasn't always the case before, mm-hmm. and that the working hours have changed. More people are doing overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And even if we talk about kids, like not all children are coming home from school straight away. Some of them have other activities or clubs or something. So just the whole family is busier than it was before.
Right. Yeah. And the chance of them all being back at one particular time.
At 5 o'clock when the risotto's yeah. on, it's just, it's much less likely.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think you could, you know, maybe a really high level student may say, you know, you said that both parents work.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you want to mention that maybe sort of 20 or 30 years ago, mm-hmm. it was mostly common for like the man would go to the work, the woman would stay at home, and she would cook this family meal.
Yeah.
Which everybody would come home and eat.
Yeah. And it would be ready when the father came home, for example, or the kids exactly. came back from school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's definitely the first one, is that essentially we're much busier today.
Mm-hmm.
And we just rarely have time to sit down together, which is true. Like, even when I was a kid, we only sat down on a Sunday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We just had every Sunday, because my dad used to get home at 8, 9 o'clock, and my mum okay, had to cook. She used to yeah. feed us at 5 o'clock. So yeah. we would eat, and then my dad would okay, have his like dinner separate. Later.
Well, it was kind yeah. of similar for us, but yeah, we sat down every Sunday without fail, definitely.
Sunday mm-hmm. dinner.
Yep.
Me and my family sitting around the table.
Yorkshire puddings, gravy.
Oh, yeah. But then because my sister was a really bad eater. My dad, we'd have to sit for 45 minutes while we waited for my sister to really? Eat a carrot. Yeah.
My brother was a slow eater as well. He didn't like everything.
All right. So definitely time. Mm-hmm. What's another reason? Why do you think people are eating together?
I think the second reason I would use is the availability of ready meals.
That's interesting. Okay, mm-hmm. go on, tell me more.
Well, it depends on which country you're in, because I know in Russia and in Latvia, where I am, ready meals actually are not very popular. You can't really just go to the supermarket and buy them like you can uh-huh. in the UK.
Uh-huh.
But the fact that even if a kid just goes to the shop, they can buy a macaroni cheese, put it in the microwave for 5 minutes and eat. You know, we've got ready meals in the UK, which are burgers. You can buy frozen burgers and cook them.
Yeah,
it's crazy. But the fact is, everybody can just buy their own meal and whack it in the microwave. And there's no real need for the whole family to sit together, because everybody can just choose what they want. It's relatively cheap and nobody needs to spend time cooking. So,
yes, I see. This is, I think, what Nick's done there. And I think that's a really great example for you to see, is that you kind of started with one thing. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes, like, the more you think about,
the more ideas come.
The more sort of clarity you get mm-hmm. to an idea. So mm-hmm. I think by the end of that, which sounds really good, is that maybe today, because like ready meals are so quick and easy, not everybody has to have the same thing yep. at every meal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, yeah, okay. Okay, that's really cool. So in my experience, whenever you've got a cause and effect essay,
mm-hmm.
students generally find the causes much easier than the effects.
Mm-hmm.
Because the causes are usually something that you are really looking at or pointing to
yeah.
in the real world. Like, you can just think about what you have observed or what you have seen, and then you can use that real information to create
a cause.
Mm-hmm. A cause, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, what can we see in the world? We can see that people are busier.
Mm-hmm.
We can see that people just tend to grab something. They eat out more, or they tend to grab something that's quick and convenient rather mm-hmm. than spending a long time cooking.
Mm-hmm.
We can see those things,
yep.
right? So, in general, I don't think students really have a massive problem with causes,
mm-hmm.
okay? But what I want to talk about here is when we talk about, like, okay, I've said in this podcast, we're going to talk about avoiding being over general
mm-hmm.
or avoid exaggerating.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that a problem? Why do we want to avoid that?
Well, the reason, I think, is because it's clearly written actually in the public band descriptors for task mm-hmm. response on the writing exam that For a 7, it says presents, extends, and supports main ideas, which is what we want everybody to do.
Mm-hmm.
But there may be a tendency to overgeneralize, and or supporting ideas may lack focus. And overgeneralize, so that means for a 7, you can overgeneralize a little bit.
Yes.
But if you do it too much, then an 8 is going to be out of the question.
Right. So basically, we only ever tell you to do something if it is included in the band descriptors, right? Mm-hmm. Like, never listen to me, never listen to Nick, right? You should just always listen to the band descriptors.
Mm-hmm.
And they specifically say, so you can have a tendency to overgeneralize for a 7,
mm-hmm.
but if you're too overgeneral, I think you could still be get a 6,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I would agree.
And if you're aiming for a 7 or higher, then you want to be able to get to an 8 for task response.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes an 8 for task response can save you if you've got a lot of grammar errors like we looked at in the last episode. So you want to make sure that you are not over general. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of, not many courses talk about this. And I think a lot of students don't even really understand what it means to be over general.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we've got these great arguments about why family meals are disappearing, mm-hmm. right? Because people are busier and because people tend to eat more convenience food, say.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is it true, Nick, that in every family today, both parents are working?
Absolutely not.
Right. So an overgeneral argument would be something like, first, both parents work in families today.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is making a statement which is true some of the time, but not all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to try to do, if you're aiming for the higher scores, is you want to try to do something called hedging. And hedging is actually, it's an economic term, right? So hedging is where rather than, I don't know, I'm not very good, but rather than investing all of your money into one share,
yep.
right, which is a bit dangerous,
mm-hmm.
you might put like a lot of your money into one share, but you may also put small bits into other shares
mm-hmm.
as like a safety net.
Hedging right? your bets.
Hedging your bets, exactly. So what we mean by hedging in essay writing is just making it clear that what you are saying is mostly true,
mm-hmm.
but it's not always
true. Yeah,
exactly. So rather than saying, firstly, both parents work in families today,
mm-hmm.
well, it's not always both parents. So it's we not. Could say something like, in most families or in many families.
In many, I think, would be better.
Many is definitely safer, right? Mm-hmm. You say, in many families today, both parents work.
Mm-hmm.
And so adding a word like many or some is very simple. Those are called quantifiers.
Mm-hmm.
But that hedges your sentence. You are saying, hey, I know it's not every family,
mm-hmm.
but it's many families. I think this is generally true.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you could add many.
Mm-hmm.
Another type of word you can add to a sentence to make it less general
mm-hmm.
is an adverb of frequency.
Yep.
So they're the words that we learn like elementary, right? I sometimes play tennis. I often play tennis, or I usually play tennis.
Mm-hmm.
So if we've got the sentence like both parents work full time.
Mm-hmm.
How could we add an adverb of frequency there, Nick?
I would add often. I would say both parents often work full time.
Exactly, right? Mm-hmm. And again, that is not difficult. That is a simple word, but that now means that you're showing it's not every
mm-hmm.
family, but this is the common trend exactly. that we see.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite way of hedging is to use the modal verb can.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure that we can use it actually in this sentence because we don't usually say both parents can work
mm-hmm.
full time. That's not.
We could maybe say right. both parents can often work, maybe, no?
Right. So, well,
use both.
I would say, so I would have, my worry, Nick, is that sometimes students go a bit crazy when they learn hedging,
okay.
right? And then they start saying, can usually, many parents can usually. Often.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I don't think for that one, but what was our second argument?
Ready meals are more readily available.
Okay. So we could say like something like in the second argument, moreover,
mm-hmm.
Ready
meals can be bought more easily.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Can be bought. It's mm-hmm. possible. It mm-hmm. doesn't mean that they are always bought,
mm-hmm.
but they can be bought.
They're there. if people need them or want them.
Exactly. And then we've got the whole, maybe the sort of clearest way of adding hedging or making your sentences less general is to use the verb tend to. So you could say, for example, families today tend to buy convenience food that they cook separately. Any of those things, so adding a quantifier like many, a frequency word like often or usually, the modal verb can, or using that verb tend to, any of those things, please be clear, I'm not asking you to add these to every single sentence that you write, okay? It's usually just when you're offering your idea. And you want to show that this is not a fact, right? Not every family has two parents that work, but this is the usual general trend. Adding these words is definitely going to help you stop being overgeneral. Now, we have a blog post about this, okay? So, you know, go to our blog. You can actually find it now because we've got a new pages on the, a new page on the new website for free resources, right? So just find that. You'll find all the links to all the podcasts and the link to the blog. Or you can just go to blog.myieltsclassroom.com. This was the first ever blog post that I wrote for writing. So if you click on writing, you go back. You're going to go back three pages. It's the first one. It's got a really great picture, Nick. It's got
it's not
got
all sheep are white, isn't it?
Yeah, not all sheep are white. It's like 99 white sheep, but one is black, right? So don't overgeneralize. Not all sheep are white. All of this is written down very clearly with really nice examples because, you know, I'm just in this, Nick, in this episode, Nick and I are just introducing you to this idea of hedging. I really recommend you go there to read a little bit more about it. But definitely for causes, you want to make sure that you're just showing that this is not the cause for every family, but these are the most likely causes.
This is the trend that's...
That's the trend, So, that's the causes. Usually not a problem because we can, students can close their eyes in the test and look at the real world and they can kind of point.
We can find something that,
yeah,
to explain it.
The places where we go wrong is when students have to then describe what the effects will be. So what happens here, Nick? What do you think? I don't know. I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but what do you think is happening in students' brains when they then have to think about the effects?
I don't know, to be honest. I can't explain it, but it is, it's quite a, an unusual phenomenon. And I do actually enjoy reading these sorts of essays, which are saying, well, if people stop having meals together, then people will start hating each other. People won't get married anymore and society will end. We'll all die.
It is. Yeah. I mean, that is, I mean, you may think Nick is exaggerating, but actually he is not, right? This is the problem. I think what happens is, well, first of all, it says clearly, what will the effects of this be on family and society? So if we're thinking about addressing the task fully, you are going to have to consider family and society.
So
you
can't, two separate arguments, probably.
I would say you you either want to think of an effect and mention its
effects on the family and society.
On the family and society, or you maybe want one for family and one for society. I think all that happens though is that students have got in their pocket some kind of concept that they try to use again and again for different essays. So if we're talking about problem solution essays, so this is an effect essay, but if you're asked to give a solution, 99% of the time students always, they're like, the solution is always government action. The government should make some rules about this, right? And for some problems, that
that's good.
That's great, right? So what type of problems would government regulation actually help?
I don't know, like people avoiding tax.
Okay, maybe sort of like the balance, the gap between rich and poor,
yeah, I suppose.
Right? Definitely government action. We could have more tax rules. Definitely environment questions, right?
For sure.
Where it's talking loads of environment questions, where it's like, you know, what can we do to, you know, maybe governments need to implement new rules about, I don't know, carbon emissions or recycling. Definitely government's rules can help there. But there are some questions for where governments have got no role to play in solving a problem. So I'm thinking of, there's a question we've got, which is like, people today know fewer of their neighbours than in the past, mm-hmm. right? Why is this? Mm-hmm. And what can be done to solve the problem? So, you know, okay, well, actually, look, let's do this as a bonus one, mm-hmm. right? If you want to, you can pause the lesson now and just think, you know, why do we know less of our neighbours today? And what can be done to solve the problem? If you want to pause, do that right now. If you don't, Nick, let's look at the real world, right? Why do people know fewer of their neighbours today?
I think people have become more insulated from the real world and social media is like people care more about their friends on social media or on the internet rather than the people immediately around them.
Oh, that's interesting. So social media means that we can keep in our house, we can keep in contact with our real friends.
People far away, basically. Yeah,
yeah, who are friends. Far away. So and we don't actually need our
neighbours.
There's
less incentive to get to know your neighbours.
That's a good one. My one for this is that in the past, people lived usually mm-hmm. for generation after generation,
yeah.
either the same house or certainly the same town.
Definitely, yeah.
And so as a result, people just naturally got to know the people that lived around them because they were just always there.
Mm-hmm.
But today we move.
We move a lot more. Look at us too.
Right, yeah. Like if, you know, if even if you don't move town or city, you probably move within the town, like new houses, bigger houses. So people just like all of that fabric of community has been lost.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a nice expression. Band 9 Lexus. Fabric of community yeah. has been lost. but what can be done to solve that problem? Is there any government rule that can stop, that can make you, you know, the government must implement a rule to make people be friends with their neighbours?
Well, the government could. Like, if it was the North Korean government, maybe they could force people to stay in the house that they're in now. And not travel within a 1 mile radius. Oh, sorry, not travel right. without outside a 1 mile radius. But you know, you're not going to get a very high IELTS score for that, are you?
No, you're not, because it would be. But this is the problem. I think because people are always like, government rules. It's a solution. It must be the government. They mm-hmm. that is never going to be a good solution for this problem. In fact, I think. I'm not sure that there are very many good solutions to this problem, to be honest.
I think they're all individual solutions and maybe right. community-based solutions.
Okay. I'm not really sure that the government can really help with this, right? I've only got one idea for this one, Nick. Okay. So I'm going to say mine first so that you don't steal it, okay? My one for this is, I know, for example, in London, mm-hmm. so I'm going from a real-life example, which I know in London, you know, where you've got a lot of people living in quite a small, you know, thousands of people living, right? Not much space. But I know that there's a lot more kind of like community spaces being set up.
Mm-hmm.
So places where people can plant flowers and grow flowers together. So like community gardens, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So they're spaces where people can go, they're outside, they help maintain the community space, and then they get to meet each other.
True.
In the process. So I would say, I don't know whether or not the government needs to create the community
no,
spaces.
No, I don't think so. I think that could be a residents association or, you know, right. someone connected with the land. Like if it's a block yeah. of flats, for example.
Yeah. Or even just encouragement. Like local people could be...
Themselves.
Yeah, like themselves mm-hmm. could start keeping their local area clean, for example.
They could just like, you know, in the entrance of the block of flats, like you could put up a sign that says like community cleaning day on Saturday, bring your own beer, free barbecue for all or something.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And also, I'm also thinking that, my sister, where she used to live in London,
mm-hmm.
their street, there used to be somebody on her street who would once a year invite everybody to their house.
Mm.
And it was for a barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
And once they did that and people started talking, then suddenly, you know, everyone's waving at each other in the street. They noticed someone got burgled and they noticed, actually, because they knew whose house it was.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe just encouraging small social events.
Yeah.
Like a street party.
That could be the second one. That could be the second solution.
That's what I think. I would say something, you know, what can we do? And to be honest, I think don't be afraid if you don't have a 100% solution.
This will work.
Yeah, some of the best solutions are the solutions which say, mm-hmm. you know, people could
yeah.
try to
mm-hmm.
organize local events.
What might work is if.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. And so, you know, those kinds of things to me, Those kind of solutions are far more successful and get a much higher score than a student who just says governments must legislate for neighbours to know each other, because that's not realistic.
Yep.
It's never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, yeah, it's just, you can't say for every single solution we need government legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you've got to step back and you've got to actually think, for this particular problem,
mm-hmm.
what could we do? And maybe the answers are much subtler
mm-hmm.
and much smaller, but I think much more successful.
And definitely use modal verbs if you're not sure.
Exactly. You know, if this happened, it might
yeah. mm-hmm.
lead to. Exactly, right? So if we then go back to our original question about families' meals mm-hmm. like disappearing, I think what happens is whenever students hear the word society, right? So for solutions, students immediately think government action. And whenever students read society, and particularly when it's connected to children,
mm-hmm.
they immediately turn to crime. It is almost without fail, you know, children who watch too much television.
Well,
guess what the result is?
Murderers.
Murder. children.
Drugs.
Children, yeah. Children watch too many violent films. What's the result? Murder. Children don't eat with their family. What's the result?
Drugs.
Drugs. Then murder, right? It is just again and again and again. It doesn't matter what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where you're living, but where I'm living, children who don't eat dinner with their parents do not become drug addicts. And they definitely don't become murderers, right?
Usually they don't.
Usually, thank you, Nick. Let's hedge. Very, very rarely become murderers. Mm-hmm. So, really, what I want to encourage you to do, and I think all that's happening is that students are panicking, right? Mm-hmm. They need something negative, right? They know that not eating together is bad.
Yeah.
So they just immediately jump from sort of like A to Z.
Mm-hmm. Without looking at B, C, D, and E and all these.
Without actually really thinking about this and without really thinking, okay, mm-hmm. we've got a family. They don't really eat together. Oh, the other one I get for this is the parents get divorced
mm-hmm.
all the time, right? So, okay, families aren't eating together. I agree this is probably not a positive trend, right? But rather than going, as Nick said, to like, Z, let's try and go to BC first, right? Let's just imagine, okay? I would encourage you to think, okay, to begin with, why is eating together a good thing?
Mm-hmm.
What is happening that this is, okay, we're going to say it's got a negative effect.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe start by thinking, what's happening at these family meals, Nick? When we sit down and eat together, why is that good?
I think it's good because it gives the family chance to talk for 30-40 minutes without TVs, maybe without mobile phones. They just sit and chat about their day.
That itself is mm-hmm. gold. That is the key, right? Mm-hmm. Like you've just said it, like you've got, when you have a meal, you've got quality time
mm-hmm.
without mobile phones or anything else where you actually communicate with your family members, mm-hmm. right? So what does that mean? So we want to go the next step. So we have time to communicate. So why is that a good thing? Why do we need to communicate?
Well, I think it's good because you can just, you know, parents can give children advice, you know, the relationship can get a little bit stronger maybe.
Mm-hmm.
If they're like, the parents can find out if there's anything bothering the children at school or something, if they're struggling with homework. Something like that.
Exactly.
It's just basic communication, isn't it?
It's basic communication. If you are sitting at a table together every day, you know what's happening with the other members of your family.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So once that stops happening, once, you know, kids are eating dinner on a tray in front of the television or they're eating out at McDonald's, so then, and you lose that quality time with each other, what starts happening? You know,
I think, well, maybe something that could happen is that the relationship can not break down, but becomes weaker, let's say.
Right.
And that parents, maybe children won't trust their parents as much.
Yeah.
Because they don't feel comfortable telling them the things that are affecting them. The parents aren't there to ask them, is everything okay?
Exactly.
And stuff like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say, you know, the problems for mm-hmm. this would be stuff like, you know, when people sit down and eat together,
mm-hmm.
it's easy for parents to make sure that their kids are doing well and that they're happy and they can give them advice. Mm-hmm. But the minute they stop, then they may stop observing. Like, they may not see changes in their children's behavior.
Yeah.
They may not recognize that the child is being bullied, for example, mm-hmm. at school. Mm-hmm. Not taking drugs, just bullied. Right, that's enough, okay? Mm-hmm. And then maybe, you know, I guess, what could the result be? You know, as these connections go, I guess people can feel lonely.
Yeah, people could feel lonely, and maybe, you know, children will drift away from their parents more than they would have.
Yeah, could feel depressed. I mean, that's all for like the individual level.
That's the individual, yeah.
I guess, though, you can take that
in you can a take really it further on to society,
to the social level and mm-hmm. say, you know, if people have less trust, as Nick said, between, mm-hmm. you know, if children trust their parents less, they're also probably more likely to trust other members of society less as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you would have sort of like, yeah, that would be it. Sort of like less trust, social trust between people. I guess, you know, if what about, you know, a lot of people talk about divorce,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you've got like mums and dads who aren't eating at the same meal. Okay, I don't think divorce is out of the question
mm-hmm.
here.
But it's not the only effect.
But it's not the only effect, and it's not the first effect.
Definitely not.
Right, so, you know, if you've got husbands and wives who aren't sitting down and talking with each other, again, they're going to have less communication. There could be, I don't know, what else could happen?
I mean, you could maybe say, like, it builds resentment or something like that. Or
right.
underlying problems and issues don't really get solved.
They grow.
Yeah.
And then this might eventually mm-hmm. end in divorce. So you could put divorce, but you should make it clear that that is the absolute last worst case scenario. Yeah. Whereas a lot of our students would just say, mothers and fathers who don't eat together, don't talk, and get divorced. Right? So you need a few steps or a bit of argument between
mm-hmm.
don't sit and eat dinner and get divorced.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, having any of those arguments, right? So sitting down and thinking, okay, what is it about eating together that is good?
That's a good way to start, definitely. Just to think, yeah. why is that good? And then basically the effects are going to be, well, okay, let's imagine that these good things didn't happen. What would happen instead? What's right. the opposite, basically, of the good things?
It's the opposite. Mm-hmm. And if you did want to talk about, you know, if you want to say, you know, these kids, you know, children who don't sit, you know, their parents aren't looking out for them at the dinner table, they're not, don't have the advice. If you want to say that they start drifting away from society,
mm-hmm.
you could do that. But if you're going to want to mention a crime, then you could say, and in the worst case scenario, they may start exhibiting antisocial behavior.
That's exactly what I was going to say, antisocial behavior.
Such as, what would an example be?
Petty thuggery.
Like, I don't know, shoplifting, right?
Yeah.
Maybe vandalism or graffiti or something, mm-hmm. which is what teenagers actually do yeah. to act out.
Not drugs and murder.
Not drugs and murder.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet. So my whole point for these questions is, although it can be good to sometimes have like some ideas,
mm-hmm.
like sort of go-to ideas, right? So if you need a solution, you might want to go to the idea of government legislation.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't go to those ideas in every type of
Definitely
essay.
Not, yeah.
Right? And I would say crime is very rarely actually ever a go-to idea. Maybe if you've got a question about, as we just briefly mentioned earlier, about the gap between the high, like the yeah. wealthy and the poor.
In that case, yeah, I would say
in that case
crime
you could.
Is okay, yeah, to use.
Yeah, but only if you justified it. If you just say, when there's a gap between rich and poor, more people steal things.
Mm-hmm.
That's you've gone from A to Z
yeah,
without
you need
telling
to explain
me.
Explain it a little bit first.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas if you said, you know, if we live in a society where we celebrate consumer products and mm-hmm. everybody is told to want the most expensive phone,
mm-hmm.
we can't be surprised when people start stealing to be able to have them if they can't afford it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the point is that you can give an argument, but there has to be some realistic explanation
mm-hmm.
Or progression to that point, I think. All right, so hopefully you've learned something in this lesson about not exaggerating. You don't have to solve every single crime. You don't have to solve every IELTS essay with a crime.
Mm-hmm.
If you want more information, as we said, about hedging, go and have a look on the blog. And that's it, Nick. You're almost free. It's time to start your holiday.
Can't wait. So excited.
Okay, so because it's your holiday, I'm not sure what we're going to do when you get back for the next episode.
I could have a big think while I'm on holiday.
Well, I was going to say we could have Nick's pick.
Nick's pick? So it's Nick's pick. My free topic choice, yeah?
Your free topic choice, Nick, for when you get back from your holiday. So that's something to look forward to.
Okay, good. I'll think about it.
All right. So everyone, come back next week. And don't forget, if you want to join one of our intensive courses, Podcast 10, when you check out, That will take £4 off the price of any intensive course for you. My IELTS Classroom podcast is a production of My IELTS Classroom Limited. Nick and I do not represent IELTS, and everything you heard in this episode is our own personal opinion. You can find the show notes and transcript for this episode on our blog. That's blog.myieltsclassroom.com. And if you're looking for our video courses, speaking lessons, and marking service, you can find that at www.myieltsclassroom.com. If you have a question or query or just want to chat, you can email Nick and I at hello@myieltsclassroom.com. Our theme music is by Heartbeat, and our artwork is produced by David Brown. Have a great week, study hard, and remember, this is my IELTS classroom. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.